The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So during our Dharma talk today, our Teisho, we invite you to continue this practice of dynamic presence. This is not a time to relax your posture. It's not a time to sit and take notes. It's a time to sit upright in the middle of your life, which is the main teaching in our Buddhist practice. And so we do this when we're doing Zazen. We do it in a moving style when we do Kinhin, our walking meditation, and chanting, as Corwin explained, and also receiving a Teisho or a Dharma talk. And I'm going to begin this Dharma talk, and David is going to, well, complete it, or at least go on from wherever I leave off and find some kind of ending. When the Dharma talk is finished, we'll have what we call a Dharma dialogue, where we all get to share our questions, our confusions, our moments of clarity with each other. So the koan we're going to look into is one that appears in two different places in our koan study. The first time it's in the Gateless Gate as case number 32, and the second time it's in the Blue Cliff Record as case number 65. And I'm going to read to you a translation from the Blue Cliff Record by the Cleary brothers. So here is the case. An outsider asked the Buddha, "I do not ask about the spoken or the unspoken." The world-honored one remained silent. The outsider sighed in admiration and said, "The world-honored one's great kindness and great compassion have opened up my clouds of illusion and let me gain entry." After the outsider had left, Ananda asked the Buddha, "What did the outsider realize that he said he had gained entry?" The Buddha said, "Like a good horse, he goes as soon as he sees the shadow of the whip." So David and I thought of this koan the other night after David gave a Dharma talk about one of our texts, and someone asked, "Are there any koans where the teacher is silent instead of saying all these words, which are so confusing?" And we immediately thought of this koan, this moment when the Buddha himself, the founder of our school, who lived 2,600 years ago, along with his attendant, Ananda, met what's translated here as an outsider. In some of the translations of this koan, the word is heretic, a person who was a practitioner of one of the many Brahmanic teachings in northern India at that time. According to some of the research we did, there were 96 separate schools, heretical Brahmanic schools, at the time that the Buddha started teaching his Dharma of waking up in this very moment. And apparently one of the things that one of the Brahmanic schools taught was that there are these opposite ways of encountering reality. And this should be very familiar to all of us. There is both the positive side where we say something, and there is the negative or empty side where there's nothing. And in the particular school that this fellow came from, these were opposed to each other. But something had happened to him, and he came to the Buddha for instruction. He was not any longer interested in positive or negative, yes or no, good versus bad. He wanted a teaching that would help him to cut through all of his own personal delusion about being a human being. And most of the translations of this koan call him an outsider, which I think is a very relatable word for all of us, because no matter how long we've been practicing Zen, for a minute or for 45 years, we often have these moments when we feel like outsiders. And so this outsider, this person who is hungry for the way, comes to the great teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, sometimes called the World Honored One. That was one of his titles that people called him. He never called himself that. And sitting by and watching this whole thing is Ananda, who was the Buddha's attendant. And Ananda was famous for a couple of things. He was the person who convinced the Buddha to let women study in the Buddha's Sangha. He was a very open-hearted person. And he also had an amazing memory. And he memorized everything that the Buddha said. And later, after the Buddha died, he recited the Buddha's words to the community. And so all of the original, we call them suttas, which is a Pali word, sutra in Sanskrit, all the original teachings of the Buddha begin, "Thus have I heard." And that's Ananda's voice. But another thing that he's very famous for is that he never came to awakening during the Buddha's lifetime. He was always puzzled by the teachings. And so we can relate to him too, because how many of us sometimes feel that we hear these Dharma talks or we listen to the chanting and the texts that we use in our liturgy service and these koans, and we don't understand what's going on. And Ananda was like this. And after the Buddha died, he became the attendant of the Buddha's Dharma heir, Mahakashapa. And it was with Mahakashapa that he came to a great awakening. But that's a different story. In this story, the outsider, the heretic, the Brahmanic practitioner comes to an awakening. And there are many, many commentaries on this. The fact that it appears in two different koan collections maybe signifies some of its importance for us. What is going on in this story? It's very simple. Somebody asks a question, the teacher responds without saying anything, and then somebody sitting by says, "What just happened?" It's not that complicated. But people sometimes look at that answer of the Buddha's and they think they know what is going on. In the commentaries in the Blue Cliff Record, there are cautions about this. Don't think, the collector of the Blue Cliff Record says, don't think that this is about silence. Don't think that this is about stillness. Don't think that this is about a teacher not responding. This guideline of don't think of these three things is important. So what are we supposed to do with it? Well, as with all koans, it's important for us to enter each of the characters' lives as fully as possible. In some of the translations of this koan, the outsider is perceived as a desperate character, someone very sincere, shaking with his puzzlement. What is it? I don't ask for affirmation. I don't ask for negation. I don't ask for words. I don't ask for not words. What is it? What is it? And I hope that maybe you can relate to this guy. He's so sincere and so questioning. Some commentators think maybe he's kind of arrogant, but I don't sense that in him myself, but maybe you do. And that's because maybe there's arrogance in us or there's a lack of arrogance. I don't know. I think all of those things are alive in all human beings, the many, many selves that we carry around inside of us and that we project onto others. And then, of course, there's the Buddha, and I'll say a little bit more about him in a moment. And then there's Ananda, who is just also in his puzzlement, extremely sincere. What is going on? I didn't understand. What just happened? And maybe this is something that we ask ourselves about reality on a daily basis. I won't go into the circumstances that we've been living through for the last 15 months, or maybe the last 20 or 30 or 50 or 70 or 80 years of our lives. But it does seem like there's a lot of opportunity for puzzlement. What just happened? The Buddha himself is not thinking about, I believe, what should I say? How should I behave in the face of this question? He's doing what we've been instructing all of us to do from the very beginning of this session, to take the practice seriously enough so that we embody it. We sit upright when we're doing zazen, when we're listening to a Dharma talk. We stand and we follow the directions around walking or yoga as best we can. We maintain our embodied presence. And then we chant with our whole hearts. We hold our chant books or our phones or our Xeroxed copies of the chant books right up in front of us, heads held high, expressing through our voices, which can't be heard on Zoom, but through the strong sincerity of our voices, of our posture, of our upright practice, we express the things that we don't even understand. We reside in our bodies because our bodies are our true homes. As long as we're living, this body is the awakened nature of the Buddha. The Buddha taught and Zen maintains that everyone is an awakened being. That is, everyone is a Buddha, because the word Buddha just means one who is awake. It's what people called the Buddha. He called himself the Tathagata, which means the one who comes, or if you add a little extra A in the middle, Tathagata, the one who goes. The one who comes and goes. This is who we are. When we realize this, we realize our awakened nature, which has been here the whole time. There was a teacher who was given this koan as a koan by his teacher. And when the teacher of this soon-to-be teacher gave him the koan, he said, "Be careful. This is not about being silent or still." And at that moment, that fellow had an awakening. Maybe it's not so fast with most of us. Maybe we're not like those horses who move at the shadow of a whip. Maybe we need to hear the teachings over and over and over and over again. That student who became a teacher said later that in his temple, in his monastery, there were only three guidelines for practice. He rooted his own practice in this particular story, this great embodied presence of the Buddha facing a question. Just this energetic quality of being here. This is the answer that we're all seeking, but we keep looking somewhere else. And this fellow said, there are only three things that you need to remember. One, drink tea. Two, take care. Three, rest. Drink tea, take care, rest. Can we live by that set of instructions? Can we hear the sounds of the birds and the traffic noises in that spirit? Can we feel how everything we encounter is expressing the answer to all of our questions? Once we begin to get a little taste of this, then we may be able to connect to what the Buddha said to the outsider.
So these koans, these stories, as Melissa said, are about us. And this puzzlement, the Buddha's eloquent response, a generous response to the outsider. From Buddha's response, sitting upright and still, hundreds, thousands of commentaries, Zen teachers like myself blabbing on and on about this dynamic stillness. And this morning, listening to Melissa, I'm caught by the injunction to not get stuck on the silence and stillness. The mind, of course, is always looking for patterns. We imagine there's some key, and if we find the key, find the secret answer, the secret handshake, then we will be an insider. And so we look for the patterns. Sitting still and upright, silent, that is the answer. But on the deepest level, our Zazen is not about sitting still and being silent. This may be the form, the practice that has been handed down thousands of years. We inherit, we are a part of this great tradition that has traveled the world, traveled through the ages, and we sit with our ancestors, our forebearers, the women and men named and unnamed, and they too are here. Here with the birds and the traffic. Here with the many thoughts running through our minds. Here with our judgments. Here with our certainties, our delusive certainties. And this question. The outsider, you and me, we come with a question. Something has unsettled us. Something has disturbed us. And we too seek an answer. We might say we are seeking an entry point. So after the Buddha responds to the outsider's question, something happens, and the outsider is overcome with gratitude and appreciation and says, thank you for clearing away the delusion to allow me to enter. Ananda says, what did the outsider realize that he said he had gained entry? I think we want to enter into our life. Our human mind is constructed in a way that we often feel a sense of separation. It appears there is some gap between us and others, and more painfully, a gap between ourself and ourself. And we long to close this gap, to enter into the moment without holding back. And we wonder how to do this, how to close the gap between ourself and ourself. And the Buddha answers, life answers. Sound of birds, words of a Dharma talk, legs maybe aching. Whatever is here. The great teacher Dogen said the walls and the pebbles, the grass and the sky preaches the Dharma. This great preaching of the Dharma is a moment after moment, the entry point is here. Beyond words and letters, beyond explanation, it cannot be transmitted, it cannot be found. Yet life itself is nothing other than the answer we have been searching for. Sooner or later, later and sooner, coming and going, no need to plan out and compare. Hour after hour, a month after month, a decade after decade, the invitation is to be here in this moment, to practice being present. No need to come up with the right words or the right answer. Just drink tea. Take care. Allow yourself to be who you already are. And then the crow that calls outside the window, the truck that rumbles by, are all the Dharma you need. An outsider asked the Buddha, "I do not ask about the spoken or the unspoken." The world-honored one remained silent. The outsider sighed in admiration and said, "The world-honored one's great kindness and great compassion have opened up my clouds of illusion and let me gain entry." After the outsider had left, Ananda asked the Buddha, "What did the outsider realize that he said he had gained entry?" The Buddha said, "Like a good horse, he goes as soon as he sees the shadow of the whip." Thank you. So I invite you to sit at ease, sit comfortably, and we'll have a time, as Melissa said, for our Dharma dialogue. So this is a Sangha practice of coming forward with your question, what didn't make sense to you, what is confusing, and also what arises in you, maybe some connection, something you have seen in your experience about this practice. So please raise your Zoom hand and we'll call on you and have a little conversation. Corwin.
Yes, Sorry about that. Thank you both for the talk. And one thing that struck me when Melissa Roshi started is calling this person an outsider. It kind of shocked me. A lot of people I know, we sort of make it cute and call them muggles, you know, if you're a Harry Potter fan.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And, so it's not quite as harsh as outsider. And even, non-practitioner sounds a little rough. And then she went on and said that, we all kind of feel like outsiders at times, the one who is dim and dull, can even I have Buddha nature, that kind of feeling. And it kind of brought it together and this whole, the whole koan just sort of fell into like what practice is for me. I come and ask a question, which to anyone else probably makes no sense whatsoever. It's like, I ask the question and then, the Buddha said nothing because that was the only answer that was needed, the only response that was needed. And then this outsider, this person who doesn't get it, the answer came out from them, from that non-answer. And then he's happy about it. He has his moment of enlightenment. And then the next person goes, hey, what did he just figure out? And again, there's no answer because it doesn't matter. And it just sort of encapsulated all of like the core of what we do in this practice, or what I do in this practice. And it's just very lovely. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, we didn't talk. I love that interpretation. It really touched me. And I hadn't seen the parallels before with the, here's one question or and an answer. And then the Buddha actually answers Ananda's question using words. And he's alluding to a famous story that's from one of his other texts. It's in a sutta about the four horses, different ways that students show up. Some people just get, they hear the instruction and everything is just clear. And then the second kind of horse, here it has to ask again and again and again and then gets it. The third horse just never seems to get it. The fourth horse just has to, persist for decades and decades and still never gets it. And we were reading about a fifth kind of horse, which is the horse that keeps hearing the instructions and just says, that has nothing to do with me. the teaching of these four or five horses is that they're all equal in terms of their sincerity as students of the way. We have a friend who had a website called theworsthorse.org. it's like not getting it and getting it. We keep comparing ourselves to other people, but who cares, right? What's the it? What's the getting? We've already entered the way. Sometimes we know it, sometimes we don't know it. And Ananda is the third ancestor of Buddhism. He's like a really big, important guy. But there he is going, I just don't get it. I don't get it. What's going on? You have to love both sides of that self story, the self narrative that everybody's telling.
And in the Gateless Gate, Wumen's comment is exactly about Ananda and the outsider. We make these divisions. Well, I'm a practitioner, but, my partner isn't, or my friend isn't, and, that poor person. And Wumen says, is there a difference between this outsider and Ananda? And of course, Buddhist, non-Buddhist, practitioner, non-practitioner, human, two nose holes, two ear holes. this is the family we belong to. So thanks, Carla.
Thank you.
Craig. I need to unmute, Craig.
Unmute game. We just did it for you. You're unmuted.
Thank you. And now I'm confused.
Quit well, bragging.
You know, before you start, I hadn't really made the connection on Zoom, this whole muting and unmuting thing. It's exactly what the Buddha and Ananda and the outsider were dealing with. So here we are.
So, Melissa, I got stuck on the outsider's understanding of opposites, and that kept rattling around throughout both of your talks. I've been trying to unlearn my understanding of opposites, you know, form and emptiness, interplaying, but yet I got in this place where I'm thinking, okay, good and bad. Yes, those are definitely opposites. No, they're not. You know, when Master says turn left and right, she was doing the opposite of me. And so, you know, I thought I was beginning to understand the interplay of duality, and I just got lost in thinking, yes, up and down are opposites, and but form and emptiness are not. So I'm befuddled.
Good.
So this befuddled place is the place where there is some possibility. Of course, the mind wants to get the pattern. Oh, I see the pattern of form and emptiness now. But really, it is incomprehensible. Sometimes we talk about the wondrous Dharma, the incomprehensible, the weird, marvelous, ungraspable. And the clarity that comes wonderful, and sometimes it's incredibly helpful, but whatever clarity we have will disintegrate, I guarantee it. And then the challenge is, can we be in the place of being undone when whatever Dharma teaching we know self-destructs to allow us to enter into the world itself, beyond any of this blabbing about Buddhism. Yeah, thanks. Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for the Tay Show. One of the things that was coming up for me is in these three entities was giver, receiver, and gift. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, you know, who's receiving, who's the giver? Is Buddha really the one kind of giving here? And what is the gift? Of course, they're all, each of those three. And right now, I happen to be away from home, and I'm spending time with my dad, and during our breakfast, he was sharing and lamenting about this foot that just doesn't respond the way it should, the way that it used to, the way that he wants it to. I can't fix that foot. I can't do anything in the sense of making that foot do what he wants it to do. But I can listen, you know, I can listen and I can be present. The Buddha in the story to me is yelling, he's screaming this gift that he is offering. This so lovely, so lovely. So thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I love that interpretation of the Buddha's silence as yelling. That his presence is so strong that it cuts through these opposites that Craig was talking about and puzzled by. And I think, you know, in your story about your father, there are two opposites that really we encounter again and again and again. So we're dealing with something that is just terrible. And so one side is to try to figure out what to do to repair it. The other side is to just accept it and be present with it. Those are opposites. What the Buddha is shouting is, it's not either one or the other. It's just this right here. your tears about your father's suffering, his frustration, the actual, if there's pain physically, there's definitely emotional pain. That's what life is manifesting as. There's no need to do one thing, accept or fix. It's just this. So imagine a life where we could hear that shouting, and you're hearing it.
Yeah.
And what is the effect for the outsider? He, in some of the translations, he weeps. He's so grateful. You've cut through everything. You weep, and we all weep with you.
Yeah. Thank you. Tina and Rich.
Mute.
There you go. Gotcha.
Oh, now you're muted again. There you go. Sure.
Thank you. So, as I listen to both of you speak with reverence, I enjoy listening to both of you very much. I was thinking about myself growing up in Brooklyn, working class Jewish person, and the pressure and the expectation to get it right, whatever that is, to right wrong, just it's enormous pressure, and that so much so that when you give simple instructions like drink tea, I forgot the second one, and then rest, it brought me to tears.
Take care and rest.
Just give me just some direction on how to behave.
Right.
And the first reading before the Dharma talk, I was moved to tears by the first reading. I can be a wind bell in the wind. I can do that.
Yeah.
So. Anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Tina. I think when it penetrates our heart, we feel it. Like we are all the outsider, you are the outsider, and you received the silence of Melissa, right? You received the yelling and then the simple instruction brings us to tears. We have tried so hard. We have wandered so long. And could it really be drink tea, take care, and rest? Yeah.
And I just want to say, your description of, I'm going to take this on a slight tangent, your description of growing up Jewish in Brooklyn and, you know, this dynamic, come on, let's achieve something here. Let's do it right. This goes back to the whole outsider thing, which really ripples through this koan. So anyone who grows up as an outsider of any kind, a woman, a Jew, a Black person, an Asian American, a gay person, there's a certain kind of fear of death in doing it wrong. I mean, it's deep, deep, deep. I will be killed if I don't do it right. And we inherit this from our parents, if we're women, from our mothers. There's the world is quite dangerous and scary. And people actually do get killed just for being outsiders to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so the possibility of liberation, no matter what category we are put into by others in the world, is amazing. It's just so big. The Buddha himself was not an outsider. He was a prince. He was a big shot guy, in Northern India at the time. That's why I love this story where the outsider comes. Who knows what his story was, but he's labeled an outsider or heretic or somebody who's not being accepted. And many of us, if not all of us, I guess I shouldn't exclude white men either, there's a way that we're all living in some kind of fear. And for some of us, it gets just so big. And for me, Zen is the liberation. connected to all that. I can still be afraid. I can still feel like I'm not doing it right. I can still, you know, tell myself terrible stories about myself. And all the time, I am an awakened being. This is what awakened beings are like. So thank you for starting that little thread.
Hester, we'll do two more here.
Okay.
There we are.
Okay. So thank you for the talk. In the latter half of the talk, when David spoke, I thought, how is it possible that I can feel connected and unconnected, or part and not part, in the same moment? It was like I belong and don't belong in the same moment. That, I mean, I could feel it. And I blame David. Thank you.
Yeah. Good, good.
But we have these ideas that it's this or that, right? And that is the duality that the outsider was coming with. What is beyond form and emptiness? What is beyond connected and disconnected? And there is a field, isn't there, where we participate in it all. No choosing and no fixation, but it all arises. So thank you. And Aaron, last comment here. There you go.
Thank you. At first, I was really impressed by this koan and the Buddha's profound response. But the more I thought about it, the more irritated I got. I don't know. I feel like the outsider was being a little disingenuous. Like, how can you come up and ask this question that seems so innocent, but you're obviously looking for a particular answer. But to me, it seems obvious. Like I say, I'm not asking you this way or that way, but answer it. Go. And when I started looking at it that way, I really don't know what to make of the Buddha's response. What, you know, it, what part of the question is he responding to? The intent, the question, the person? The only person in this koan who didn't irritate me was Ananda, because he seems like the only sincere, you know, he is only on his surface what he is. That's all, you know, he's, you know, sincere to the core about what is going on here. But the other two seem to have so many layers.
Well, you know, what I'm hearing as you're speaking, Aaron, is you're coming forward with a question that you want answered too. You can really relate in a sense, even though you're irritated. Well, maybe especially because you're irritated to what this guy's asking and the Buddha's answer and then his response of like, yippee, thanks. And he just hightails it out of here. That's also interesting and something I hadn't really put together. Ananda stays with the Buddha for years and years and years through the Buddha's death and beyond. This is the only time the outsider's here. He just shows up, asks his question, gets his answer, and leaves. You know, that good, bad, I don't know what's right here. But I know that often in these Dharma dialogues, people do come forward with, I want an answer to this question. And we never can answer those kinds of questions. We just do our best to engage with something that feels alive in the question itself, right? It's just impossible. So I think the summary of all this that I'm saying, because I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm just so excited by your view of this koan and how, you know, the encouragement is always to look inside and see, who am I? Do I ever frustrate myself when I don't answer, or do I think that I get it, and then next minute I'm just disabused of that that delusion, you know? So all these different vantage points, the koan is so simple, but it's very rich because it does take on so many versions of the self delusion that manifest for us, you know, the one who asks, the one who wants something, the one who thinks that she's got the answer, the one who's puzzled. I like the one who's puzzled. I don't like, right? You like and dislike. It's all here in this little simple koan. It makes me realize why it shows up in two different collections from two different sources. Yeah.
Great.
So thank you so much.
So let's come back to our meditation posture. And we'll sit for a few breaths and then move into walking.